Welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. Each weekday morning here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths associated with religion and with politics, with patriotism and the media, and with military and economic schemes. It's been a field day this last couple of weeks. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to help everyone understand what is occurring behind these headlines while predicting how these events will shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we're going to turn to God. We're going to engage him on his terms by way of his one and only covenant and through his always dependable Torah teaching. If at any time over the next 2 hours you would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said or add your 2 cents, 2 shekels, whatever it may be, 877-300-7645, considering what we've done to our dollar, I hope it's more than 2 cents. We learned a great deal more about the Tsarnaev brothers, Tamerlan and Jokhar. Boy, that's a name that is way too close to Jokhar, not just to call him the Joker. On January 18th, we're told, it's a Friday, of course, at the mosque. That's the nature of Islam. The Islamic Society Mosque in Cambridge, specifically, so the poison, of course, that caused this bombing was right there promoting its religion, right in the midst of Cambridge. On Martin Luther King Day, it just so happened to be, they weren't celebrating the day, but the imam was extolling the merits and virtues of, and I quote, our prophet, and Martin Luther King, comparing them. Now, there's a couple of issues there. Of course, that would mean that the imam in the Islamic Society Mosque in Cambridge was being a complete hypocrite. He was spouting absolute rubbish. Muhammad was not a prophet. You cannot refer to him as a prophet and be sane. Muhammad never predicted anything that came true. Never once. And everything that he has thus far predicted has either already been proven false or is so stupid as to make you want to shake your head and say, why would anybody in their right mind believe this imbecile? Muhammad is not a prophet. He wanted to be a prophet, but he was never a prophet. Ever. Second, you cannot compare Martin Luther King to Muhammad. They are as different as oil and water. They both may have been human, but that is about the only legitimate comparison. So Tamerlane stood up and he shouted that a comparison cannot be drawn between a non-Muslim and Muhammad, and he called the imam a hypocrite. Now, for most people listening, they are so ignorant of Islam, they've got no concept of what that means, hypocrite. Well, I know the term hypocrite, that means, you know, to say one thing, do another, that means to be contradictory. But in the case of Tamerlan, he was right. It is stupid to make such a comparison. Completely hypocritical. But in Islam, those who listen to this program, those who have read Prophet of Doom, know that the ninth surah, the second to last revealed, defines a hypocrite. It is an extraordinarily important term in Islam. That's why when the imam of this mosque was on television describing what happened, you could see fear in his eyes because he knew what he had done would cause any good Muslim to kill him. Not Tamerlane, the imam. A hypocrite is defined by Allah in the ninth surah as a Muslim who does not promote jihad. A Muslim who is unwilling to invest their wealth and their lives in the pursuit of jihad, which is war against all humankind. War against all non-Muslims and war against all peaceful Muslims.
Yeah, but they've done a job to try and get everybody to believe that that's an inner struggle. I mean, I've heard that numerous times throughout my life. Like, they've tried to make that.
Yeah, right after 9/11, there was an enormous effort by the Islamic community to lie on behalf of jihad, to say that jihad was an inward struggle. The word in Arabic, jihad, means to struggle, as in to fight, as in to have a wrestling or boxing match or an armed insurrection. That kind of struggle is what the word jihad means. Jihad is presented in the Quran many times. And every time that jihad is presented in the Quran, every single time, it is accompanied by the concepts of fighting with your life, sacrificing your life, using all forms of weaponry, killing and being killed. It's pretty hard when you actually read how the word is used in the Quran to make the argument that it is a peaceful struggle. In fact, it is impossible, and therefore all of the imams use the naivete of the American media and politicians to lie.
I was going to say, yeah, if you use it in context of where it is, and from what the verses I've read or the verses I've heard you and IQ both use, it doesn't make any sense to be an inner struggle.
It's impossible. It's impossible.
Yeah, exactly.
It's impossible. There's only one statement in all of the hadith, and to use it, of course, then the Muslims have to recognize the viability of the hadith, so it's a double-edged sword for them. And if you use the hadith, then Muhammad becomes nothing but a terrorist and a mass murderer, a slave trader and a rapist. And that's probably bad for the credibility of one's religion. But in the case of jihad, there is one time where Muhammad's favorite sex toy, the little girl that was 6 years old when he began to abuse her at the time he was 50, because of all of the glorification of these terrorist raids that Muhammad was leading, these jihadist raids where Muhammad's militants would go out and terrorize innocent communities. They would rob them. That's how Islam was founded. It's how it created the wealth to expand, was by terrorizing communities, robbing them of their wealth, enslaving the children, selling the children off as slaves, and then killing the men and raping the women. Rape is an incentive for barbarians, which the first Muslims were. And so in that context, Aisha, the little sex toy of Muhammad, said that she wanted to be able to go out on a jihad raid so that she could also enjoy the booty and the notoriety that was being given to the jihadist by Muhammad. And Muhammad said, you know, for women folk like you, the jihad is to become a better Muslim. And so that's it. Nothing beyond that. And every other mention, of which there are hundreds, presents jihad as fighting, armed conflict, killing. Mass murder is how it is defined. And even there, the contrast is between what Muhammad was doing, mass murder, terrorism, jihad, and the difference for his sex toy. And it wasn't for all women. It was just for his favorite toy, the little girl that he could conquer in a pedophilia act. So he called the imam a hypocrite. That is extraordinarily insightful, because the Ninth Surah defines a hypocrite as a non-violent, non-jihadist Muslim. And what Allah says of the hypocrites, now, they became hypocrites because they were unwilling to cross the desert to go and terrorize a Byzantine community. Up to this point, every target of the 74 targets that Muhammad had terrorized, they were all either Jewish farming communities with no weapons whatsoever, no army, no police, no way to defend themselves, or they were Arab communities also with no armies, no means to defend themselves. You know, there's this myth that Muhammad was this great general of a wonderful, marvelous Islamic army. Not the case. Muhammad never once, ever engaged against the military. Ever. Never once. 100% of his raids were against, and battles were against, civilians. So what the ninth surah, the Muslims in Yathrib, today's Medina, said, no, we don't want to go across the desert to attack a Byzantine community. Yeah, we understand that it's an outpost community that is separated a long ways from where they would have any, the Byzantines would have a military, but they actually have a military. And that's stupid. So let's not do that. And so Allah, Muhammad's pet rock of a god, called those non-jihadist, peaceful Muslims who didn't want to go and terrorize a Christian community, hypocrites. And then after calling them hypocrites and using the term multiple times, he told the good Muslim jihadists to kill them so that he himself, Allah, could attend to their torture in hell, that he personally wanted to torture the peaceful Muslims in the hottest places in hell. And so if you understand what Islam says, what the Quran says, particularly in the ninth surah, and you know the circumstances leading up to the ninth surah, then by that story, you have a complete understanding of the nature of this religion, that it is impossible to be a good Muslim and to be a peaceful person. You understand that if you are a good Muslim, you have to be a terrorist. You understand why these brothers wrote on their social media pages that they were following Muhammad's example. And that is what made them terrorists. It wasn't because they were inspired by some other offshore Islamic organization. It's because they were attempting to follow Muhammad's example, and they knew what most Americans don't know, that Muhammad was a ruthless terrorist, a mass murderer, someone who abused women, someone who saw no problem with killing or with stealing. It dominated their lives. The second time, this was actually the second time that Tamerlane had stood up in the mosque. This time he was booed, though. And it's the second time he did it, and he'd done it in 2 months. This time he was booed. Why do you suppose he was booed? Was he booed? Because it was, they recognized that, there's lots of commonality between Martin Luther King and Muhammad, because obviously he was right. No, he was booed because when you go to an Islamic mosque, you aren't allowed to speak. There is in Islam, according to the Quran, you must submit. You have to submit to the imam. And so if the imam is speaking, you have to be there on your knees, on the ground, looking up at the imam. And you are not allowed to challenge an imam in Islam. And all they had to do is point to the Quran and say, surrender. Submit, cower. And that's what he had to do, even though he was right. We'll look at the comparison, which is laughable, between Martin Luther King and Mo in a moment. Back to Shattering Myths. Because the imam was trying to make a hypocritical comparison between Martin Luther King and Muhammad, let's compare and contrast the two. Martin Luther King was a Christian. He was thus an infidel. The ninth surah and the fifth surahs of the Quran redefine Allah's enemy. You see, throughout the Quran, up to the fifth and the ninth surah, the reason it's really the ninth and the fifth surah is that the fifth is the last revealed, the ninth was the second to last, is that they had overhunted Jews. Every time that the Muslims had had their noses bent out of shape because they had failed in a terrorist raid, they had gone and attacked a defenseless Jewish community. They had done it the four times that they lost. And now they had overhunted them. There were no more Jews to abuse. And they had abused every Arab community within camel ride of Yathrib, today's Medina. And so they needed fresh blood, new prey. And so the only opportunity was to go north and to start raiding the Byzantine outposts. And so the Quran redefines infidel. It redefines the enemies of Allah in the fifth surah. That's its purpose. And Christians become infidels, the enemy of Allah. So Martin Luther King was the enemy of Allah, not someone to be compared with Allah's messenger. Muhammad. Martin Luther King was a peacemaker. He promoted racial blindness, his idea that we should not judge people by the color of their skin, but instead of by their character, was the antithesis of Muhammad. Muhammad's judgment was based on skin color. He was abusive to blacks, and he despised Jews. He was therefore anti-Semitic. And as a legacy of Muhammad, in the Sudan, Arab Muslims killed not only 2.5 million African animists and Christians. Once they had overhunted animists and Christians, they began to slaughter African Muslims as because they viewed them as inferior. In Mali, where the French are bogged down today, the killing is between Arab Muslims against African Muslims. Islam is resolutely racist. It's the exact opposite of Martin Luther King. Martin Luther King was trying to liberate former slaves. Muhammad was a slave trader. There is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that Martin Luther King was a rapist, and yet Muhammad was. He was not a pedophile, Muhammad was. He was not incestuous, Muhammad was. He was not a murderer, much less a mass murderer, Muhammad was. He was not a slave trader, Muhammad was. He was not a kidnapper, Muhammad was. There is, to compare these two men is to compare the most opposite human beings that you can possibly imagine.
They both had names that start with M.
There you go. So you found the connection. I stand corrected. It is to think that in Cambridge, a place of higher learning, that an imam would make such a statement in a mosque when it is so obviously untrue, tells you just how badly his audience of Muslims wants to be fooled, how ignorant they are regarding the nature of Muhammad, and how susceptible religious individuals are to being deceived. Now, if you go a little further into the story regarding the mosque, Tamerlane was often at the mosque, in fact, almost every Friday for prayers, always with his brother, according to those who knew the Sharnarevs best. But not according to the mosque authorities. No, they say, oh, he was very seldom there, the older brother, and the younger brother was never there. Yeah, they say they want to distance themselves from this. It's the same thing that CARE, the Center for American Islamic Relations, wants to do. Always to disassociate. Well, that's not how we understand. We understand by associating. It's the essence of thinking. There's another interesting aspect to all this. Of course, we all know that 2.5 days passed before the feds read Joker his Miranda rights. That is a peek into our future. As was the police and military state that existed in Boston, where everybody was locked down and forced to cower in their homes. The whole country will be on lockdown within the next 10 to 15 years. Depend upon it. America will lose its reserve status as a currency. It will no longer be able to consume more than it produces. Our debt will break our back. And America will become a police state because there will be anarchy. We'll return. We'll talk a bit about the shootout at the Watertown Corral and then turn our attention to the issue of understanding how these boys became so bad. I'm your host, Diotta. You can engage in this discussion by calling 877-300-7645. During the break, Scott, our producer, was chatting with me and saying, you know, can you imagine the what kind of chutzpah it would take to compare Martin Luther King and Muhammad in a mosque? Two things immediately flagged in my mind. The first of those is that the imam knows that he's lying, He knows that there is no comparison between Muhammad and Martin Luther King. He studied the Hadith. He studied the Quran. He knows that Muhammad was a terrorist. He knows that Muhammad was a mass murderer. He knows that Muhammad was a slave trader. He knows that Muhammad engaged in kidnapping. He knows that Muhammad was a rapist and a pedophile, that he was incestuous. He knows those things about Muhammad, and he knows that none of those things are true about Martin Luther King. And so he lied, deliberately, knowingly. And my point is always with religious promoters is that the majority of them know what they're saying is untrue. And it gets right down to the character of an individual. If you have to lie to promote what you believe in, why are you doing it? If you know it's not true, if the only way that you can make people believe that it's true is to lie, why are you doing it?
My guess is that it benefits him in some way right now.
Yeah, well, of course. Yeah. So, power.
Yep.
Sex, power, money. It's always back to the same thing. The second thing is, imagine how little regard this imam had to have for the audience in the mosque, for Muslims in Cambridge. How utter disdain he had to hold them. That he was going to tell them something that couldn't possibly be true. The opposite was true. And that he knew that not one of them would question him. They wouldn't think about it. They wouldn't process the information. It showed a complete disregard for the intelligence of his audience. It's the same trick that Paul uses throughout his letter. He is so blatantly lying that what he is basically saying, I recognize that the vast majority of people that read and listen to what I have to say won't be smart enough to process it. That's the reality of those who are religious, particularly Muslims. Now, moving on to the shootout at the Watertown Corral. What it showed, if you look at the video, we listened to the audio on yesterday's program. What it showed when you look at the video is that police automatic weapons were firing like it was the 4th of July. I mean, the flashes out of the ends of those guns, overwhelming. Hundreds and hundreds of rounds that were shot at that boat. They wanted to kill him. They were having fun. It is something extraordinarily disturbing about a society that wants to outlaw its citizens to have automatic weapons. In fact, does outlaw its citizens to have automatic weapons. You can only have a semi-automatic weapon. And the police in a high-density community of homes shooting hundreds upon hundreds of rounds. They wanted to kill him. The same thing was true with Osama bin Laden. They didn't want to capture him. They wanted to kill him. They even made up a story to make it sound heroic that he was reaching for a gun when the SEALs that were there now said that's not even remotely true. There was no gun anywhere near the man. We shot him on first sight. Not only right through the head, but we plunked him with more rounds as he lay on the floor. We wanted to make sure he was dead. Dead men tell no tales. Everyone wants to know, of course, in the media, how they came under radical influences, as if radical is the new definition of Islam. We're not going to use Islam. We're not going to say how they came under the influence of Islam. We're going to say radical influences. We can't just say, how did they become Muslims? How do they become fundamentalist Muslims? No, it's radical influences. Developing extremist ties. Read the Quran. I mean, we don't need to spend hundreds of billions of dollars on intelligence gathering. Read the Quran. The FBI cannot find a connection to a foreign terrorist group. Still can't. And that is because the only viable connection between every Islamic terrorist is the obvious one, Islam. Yesterday was announced that by the Canadians that they had foiled a plot by Muslims to blow up trains traveling between Canada and New York City. And they said that this plot that they had foiled had been organized and was being carried out at the behest of Al-Qaeda in Iran. I mean, if you don't just roll over laughing when you hear that, as to how far we have pushed this Al-Qaeda thing to represent the religion of Islam, then I don't know why you're listening to this program. The Iranian ambassador said, you know, that he said, I haven't stopped laughing since I heard it. I mean, it's got to be the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard somebody say. Al-Qaeda in Iran. Al-Qaeda is a Sunni terrorist organization, now an all but defunct Islamic Sunni terrorist organization. The Sunnis are at war with Shias. Iran is a Shia-controlled country. There is no Al-Qaeda in Iran. There never will be. Talk about stupid. But because the judicial investigative arms and police in the West have been indoctrinated not to make any comparisons to Islam, not to even speak of Islamic terrorists as being Islamic, but instead of being radicals and extremists, always redacting the word Islam, they had to come up with a way to present these Muslims, whom they had stopped from blowing up the train, as an act of terrorism without associating with Islam. And so the idiots in Canada, I'm sorry, I've got a lot of friends in Canada. Most Canadians that I have met are very smart people. But your government just absolutely made a complete and utter fool of itself when it talked about the inspiration and the control for this terrorist act came from Al-Qaeda in Iran. Now, could it have been sponsored by Iran? Absolutely. If the terrorists that they captured were Shias. But don't say Al-Qaeda. One of the talking heads on the television actually made a decent point yesterday on CNN. We're talking about, you know, what do we know about Chechen Muslims? And they don't want to talk about the terrorist acts the Chechen Muslims have perpetrated because, you know, the uncle said, oh, we're a peaceful people. You have disgraced our people, you know, speaking of the boys. And yet the Chechenian Muslims are some of the most vicious terrorists in the world. They are the perpetrators of scores of terrorist attacks on Russian airports, on Russian theaters, on Russian schools. And their specialty is attacks on Russian hospitals. They attack soft targets. Civilian targets with children, with elderly, and with the infirmed. They are unbelievably disgusting. Unbelievably. Islam and Chechnya, for some reason, that combination of the two creates what might be the most ruthless, depraved terrorist in the world. The Veselin School massacre was the single worst terrorist act I can recall reading. Ever. And the story is, you can find it in Prophet of Doom. It's listed there, as is the Moscow theater attack, as is the hospital attacked by the Chechen Muslim. But his point was that he wouldn't mention any of those things, of course. His point was that Chechnya is supplying considerable numbers of jihadists to the Syrian rebellion. And his point was, he says, you know, here's as America and the world arming the rebels in Syria when you have known terrorists that are supplying the majority of the personnel against the Assad government. How is it that we're aiding them here and we're fighting them someplace else? And he brought up the hypocrisy of all of that. Turning now to another interesting aspect of this story. There was a young girl, Christian girl, Roman Catholic, I think, by upbringing. Pretty girl. Her name was Katie Russell. She became the victim of Tamerlane. Her college roommates, when she began to date him, said to her, it says, are you crazy? He is brainwashing you. He is belligerent. He is violent. He will cut off your association with all of your friends. Well, you have to ask yourself a question. Why would this man, who is now an observant Muslim, praying five times a day, his whole life focused on Islam, marry a Christian and force her to commit to convert to Islam after their marriage? You know that Tamerlane did not work. Nothing. Sit around all day, being a good Muslim. Didn't work. He sent his new wife out to be his slave. She worked 7 days a week, 70 hours a week, as a maid cleaning toilets. Now, 3 years ago, Tamerlane was arrested for beating a woman. We don't know if it was Katie or the previous girlfriend, but because it was 11 months prior to their marriage. But based on what we know, he was arrested and did admit to beating a woman. The names of the victim have been redacted from the police report, so we don't know if it was Katie or Katie's predecessor, but she certainly knew of it. So based upon all of this, what we can assume is that Katie Russell is a submissive. She is a woman who craves the control of abusive men. All Muslims are submissives, by the way. And most especially Muslim women. Islam means submission. You cannot be a Muslim without being a submissive. You are being abused by Muhammad's wannabe God, who was modeled after Satan. You are being abused by your fellow Muslim. And if you're a woman, according to the Quran and the Hadith, Muslim men can do anything that they want to do with you, including abuse you, and you have no rights. The moment that he married her and she converted to Islam, he owned her. For him, it was all about conquest. It was hating Christians and therefore craving a Christian to conquer, a Christian that he could control, a Christian that he could enslave to serve his needs. We will share a couple of comments that Muhammad made about women when we return to Shattering Myths in a moment. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is what Muhammad had to say about women. He said, "O women folk, you should ask for forgiveness, for I saw the bulk amongst the dwellers of hell as women." A wise lady said, "Why is it, Allah's apostle, that women comprise the bulk of the inhabitants of hell?" The prophet observed, "You curse too much and you are ungrateful for your spouses. You lack common sense. You fail in religion and you rob the wisdom of the wise." Upon this, the woman remarked, "What is wrong with our common sense?" The prophet replied, "Your lack of common sense can be determined from the fact that the evidence of two women is equal to one man. That is proof." The Quran makes a point many times to say that women have half the value of a man. They get half the inheritance. Their testimony is only half as good. So since Muhammad's pet rock of a god said that women were half as valuable as men, Muhammad deduced that therefore that Muhammad lacked common sense, and that's proof. So here's the lone prophet, the lone spokesperson, prophet only in the sense of he is the lone founder of Islam, the lone person that pretended to speak for the Islamic God, the author of the Quran, and he is saying that women comprise the bulk of the inhabitants of hell, that they curse too much, they are ungrateful for their spouses, they lack common sense, they fail in religion, and they rob the wisdom of the wise. That is the official Islamic position on women. If you are a woman like Katie Russell and you convert to Islam, you are a fool. Why would you do that to yourself? Unless you're a submissive and you prefer pain. Tabati, Allah permits you to shut women into separate rooms and to beat them. If they abstain, they have the right to food and clothing. Treat women like domestic animals. They possess nothing themselves. Allah has made the enjoyment of their bodies lawful in His Quran. Wake up, folks. This religion is rotten to the core. Tamerlane chose a Christian woman because it's all about conquest. He wanted to control a Christian, and she became his slave. He beat her. Less than a year before they were married, as I mentioned before, Tamerlane was arrested, accused of domestic assault and battery against a woman at his home in Cambridge, the police records show. The police report was redacted to hide the woman's name, but the woman was crying hysterically. She called 911 to report that she was beat up by this man on the afternoon of July 28, 2009. This, by the way, was before the FBI went out to investigate the Russian report that he was a terrorist. So the FBI had this evidence at their disposal as well when they decided, nah, this man's not violent. Let's leave him alone. Sarnaev told the police officer that his girlfriend was yelling at him because of another girl. I asked the suspect if he had to hit him. The report reads, and he says, yeah, I hit her. The number of media outlets interviewed Russell's friends, her college roommates. They described Tamerlane as very controlling and extremely manipulative of their friend. They say that he was combative and angry. He often would call Russell names and insult her. He would call her a slut and a prostitute. And they remember fights they would get into where he would fly into rage, throwing furniture and other things at her. End quote. This is what Islam does to someone. Here we are presenting in the media, Tamerlane is this wonderful guy who is a boxer. He wanted to fight for his country. Everyone just liked and loved him. Look at these handsome pictures of him. He was enraged. Back in 2009, proof of it. Combative and angry. Call his girlfriend who became his wife names and insult her. Called her a slut and a prostitute. Would fight her and throw things at her. And this woman still wears Islamic headdresses and claims to be a devout Muslim. What on earth causes people to be so stupid? Well, Russell dropped out of school after she became pregnant. She pulled away from all of her friends. She lost contact with everyone except the man that she had become enslaved to. This is the story of Islam. It is what Muslims want to do to everyone. If you aren't willing to affront this religion, it will happen to you.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact.